I have to pee.
No, you're gonna do it on air.
You want that? You'll get that. Jackie, get me a bottle.
Please actually don't.
I'll do it, Cassidy.
I
Don't
know.
make me.
I know you will.
I'm sticky and it's warm and I'm kind of hyper. I don't know why. Anyways, let's go.
I'd rather have you hyper than sleepy. Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. From the sweltering swamp of Portland, Oregon, you are Richard Wally.
Yes, and from the drought of the Southern Californianess, you are Cassidy Robinson.
I am. Now, despite the prolonged drought that we're having and the, threats of imminent doom I listen to every day on NPR about, water shortages and all these laws they have to pass to make sure the people don't use too much water. Apparently the rest of the world is burning up, and it's been, for California weather, been fairly mild here.
Yeah, it's pretty warm. It's supposed to be like in the hundreds next week, and
Gross.
you can feel the moisture in our
Right.
house.
Like
I'm
I
really worried when we podcast when it's this warm because like I get like super inarticulate and a little crazy. And well, it just may be entertaining. I don't know. I have no idea at this point,
Longtime
but
fans look forward to the summer months for crazy steam-boiled Richard.
yes.
Yeah, I mean, I've been there in the summer. I've never been there when it's been that hot, but I know that because of the way the, you're in a rainforest basically.
It's
The
very
air
st
is always pretty moist, so when it's really, really moist like that and thick and 100 and something degrees, it does, you must feel like you're in a sauna all the time.
It's just sticky. Like, it didn't used to, I don't know. And also, it hasn't been raining that much around here. And so it's just like all the, it's just sticky. It's gross. I don't like it right now. It's also an apartment problem. We live on a second floor. It's got a lot of Western exposure. It's, yeah. Anyways, the most boring podcast topic we could actually think
The
of talking
weather.
about. Yeah.
Well, no, it's interesting. I don't know. I just think it's interesting because, like, I have friends in Las Vegas and they're talking about how hot it is. Even Idaho, which is like a temperate desert, the part of Idaho we were from, even they're talking about how, like, it's way too hot. And then I'm kind of like, it's been sort of like cloudy and windy here.
That
So.
sounds wonderful. That's why I fucking moved here. What is this sunny bullshit?
It's like Freaky Friday.
Yeah.
So last weekend, against my better judgment, so I decided, I live in West LA now, so it's only a hop, skip, and a jump down to Hollywood. And I went to Amoeba Records.
Oh,
And
that's bad.
I have you ever heard of Amoeba?
Yeah, you've told me about it a few times. I'm saying that's bad because I'm worrying about your finances for you.
I mean, you should,
I
but
am, yes.
Even though I consider myself a very frugal buyer, considering all the things I see that I don't buy.
That I don't know if that makes you a frugal buyer, but go on.
I'm frugal. Damn it. But no, I mean, if people have never been to, I mean, I guess especially for Portland people, I would describe it as it's sort of the record store version of Powell Books. Like, it's just massive. It used to be an old bowling alley that they turned into a record store. It's like two stories. The bottom floor, which just seems to go on forever. Like, you can literally get lost in there, and I have. I'm like, where are the 7 inches? How did I end up in techno? But then the top floor is all movies, and they like organize things by director, and they have like a whole like glass case of you have to ask them to like unlock because it's out of print stuff. And it's always a massively expensive, like $70 for like a Blu-ray. They have that Christine in there, that one that that had a really limited run on Blu-ray.
Really? Did you buy it?
No, it's like $70.
Did you steal it? That's not bad, actually. You should
That's
steal
good for
it
that.
For
I mean, it
me.
Might be more than that. I don't know. There's a bunch of stuff in there. But no, the point of this story is I went there, and you know, I mean, you know, prices range. You can get fair deals there if you're really picking through.
Mm-hmm.
But they had the whole end cap in the movie section filled with Laserdiscs. Just filled. And they're all like $2 to $3 because right. Nobody collects Laserdisc anymore. It's like a totally dead format. And if you know anything about me, I love dead formats.
So you're buying some VHSs and
Laserdiscs. I got rid of all my VHS.
I'm proud of you for that. Good job.
Right. I mean, I had this huge purge before I moved to California because I was underestimating and overestimating how much space I was going to have because I just didn't know, really. And right. Because moving stresses me out, so that's when I start to, like, freak out and throw things away that I probably actually need. But I got rid of all my VHS, which I had in a huge box. And not even just my VHS. Like, I remember my old roommate, Adam.
Mm-hmm.
He had a ton of VHS. And one day, and I, you know, he had a lot of cool stuff in there, like you know, Lucio Fulci's Zombie and like other Italian horror films and stuff that he collected over time, and the bunch of episodes of Outer Limits and that kind of stuff. And one day he was just like, yeah, I just couldn't really, you know, justify owning them anymore. I ran out of space, so I just took them all to the Salvation Army. And was like, you did what? I would have taken them. When did you go? He's like, just today. I'm like, take me back. I'll take them. And so we literally drove to Salvation Army, and I made them give all those VHSs back to me, and then I just got rid of them.
Yeah, that's,
I kept,
that sounds about
I kept
right.
my Star Wars trilogy on VHS.
I did that as well, yeah.
And I kept my Twin Peaks collection on VHS just because I thought those were kind of cool and kitschy and whatever.
Yeah, you're really into the packaging. Like, I'm right. not saying that's a bad thing, but you do have a very, you're one of those niche people.
I'm one of those people. Like, I had to like force myself, really tried hard to not buy any of those Laserdiscs. I mean, A, I don't have a Laserdisc player.
I see. What's funny is we were at I think it was just a Goodwill. But they had a bunch of Laserdiscs, and I almost bought some for you because I thought you would like them.
I would have.
Silence of the Lamb.
Oh, my God, Richard. I mean, it's it was probably the Criterion, too.
It was, yeah.
It's probably good that you didn't because I would, like, all it need. I have one Laserdisc right now, which I got on accident.
Mm-hmm.
A long time ago when our hometown record store closed or changed locations, they had a huge record sale.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought a few things, not a ton, about like 5 or 6 things. But I thought that when I bought the laser, I accidentally bought the Laserdisc of Rock and Roll High School because I thought it was the record soundtrack.
Right.
And then later, like years later, I was like, oh, I'm going to play this bad boy. And I open it, and it's a big, fat, you know, Laserdisc. And I was like, oh, oops. So all I need is one more, and it's officially the beginning, the seed of a collection.
That's not, yeah.
Yeah, like I could teeter at any moment. So if somebody ended up giving me a Laserdisc,
teetering right now, and
I know.
I can hear
I'm
it.
Thinking
I can hear your thought process.
They were like $3. They were so cheap. Ah. I'm still thinking about it. Not even like the best movies, but a lot of stuff I already own on DVD. All right, let's get into the movie news.
Okay.
Today we're also going to be reviewing Dope in our regular reviews, and we're going to be reviewing Boys from Brazil in our Netflix homework. But before we get to that, Dwayne Johnson and the San Andreas team tackle Rampage, based on the action video game from Midway in the 80s. Did you ever play Rampage?
Heck yeah. I've played several different iterations.
Mm-hmm.
I'm way into it. I always well, that's not true. I always either played, my first choice was the lizard, Lizzie.
Right.
Lizzie.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. Yeah. And then I think the werewolf was a rat, was Ralph.
Mm-hmm.
And then I never played the monkey. Fuck the monkey.
Kisa, anybody younger than 15 is listening, and I don't know why you would be. It was an old arcade game where basically you could be a werewolf, you could be like basically like a Godzilla like lizard, or a King Kong like gorilla. And you compete over who can destroy a city faster. It was a button masher, basically, which meant that I was halfway decent at it.
Oh, because you could just not do anything.
Yeah, you didn't need skill at all, which were my type of games. It was always in the every arcade you went to.
So do you feel like you can, like, participate? Because, like, usually if it goes video games, you go, like, dead quiet. You were like, yes, Rampage, I can talk about this.
Yeah, because I actually played this. And also, I remember as a kid, as a tiny, tiny kid, this was like something we always would talk about. I was like, well, the Rampage, when they make a movie, it's going to be so badass. Now in my head, I'm like, will it? But
I don't know. I'm pretty excited.
I am. I haven't seen San Andreas.
Oh, I haven't.
The Rock is always entertaining, or can be at the very least.
Charismatic.
Yeah.
I mean, even some of the bad films I've seen him in, I've still kind of enjoyed him in them. You know what I'm saying? Like, there are certain actors where you're just like, even in the worst films that you've hated, been like, he was decent, though.
Yeah. Elevates the material.
Well, it is, I don't even know if he elevates it necessarily. He just...
does his thing.
He just does his thing, and it makes his portion a little better.
Right. So in this, I don't know where the story is in it. I mean, I guess it could kind of be like Crimson Peak, the other one, Pacific Rim-ish.
Oh, okay.
Type situation. I don't know. What do you think?
Okay, so it's about three. So, I mean, I guess the base story, because, like, it's funny because these video games used to have base stories, even though they wouldn't play out during the video game at all. So, like, three scientists basically accidentally turn themselves into these giant beasts. So I don't know. It could go a lot of different ways. If I was writing it, it would be about, you know, science gone amok. It would just be Jurassic Park to the billionth degree.
Right.
So I don't know. That's what I would assume, but I have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, even if it looks, it could be terrible. And I mean, honestly, probably will be. But I'm pretty excited.
I think it can be fun terrible, though.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. I hope that it embraces the camp.
Is it weird that I kind of want, like, a fake 80s aesthetic to it, too?
Yeah, I do, too. That's not what we're going to get.
No, but that's what I want.
Yeah, but like a giant werewolf tearing a building, who doesn't want to see that?
Yeah, no, nobody.
He was always my favorite.
The lizard. Lizzie all the way. Female scientist, even. Yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that. You're right. Okay, well, you talked about Jurassic Park, which is a good segue for your story.
Steven Spielberg is developing the Jurassic Park authors, Michael Crichton's, Thriller Micro at DreamWorks. I don't know much about the novel, but I hope it's weird... 1960s throwback baloney, like what is that movie, the Six Inch Man or whatever that is.
Oh,
it's a Richard Matheson movie. It was good. I actually really enjoy that.
Yeah, I don't know anything about the book either. Crichton, you know, he's written a lot of stuff and generally fairly pulpy, and he's also, you know, everyone immediately thinks of Jurassic Park because it was a huge hit. But he also did a movie. I don't know if it was based on one of his books or if he just wrote the screenplay, but it's called Westworld. Came out in like the, I want to say, late 70s, early 80s. And it was exactly the same plot as Jurassic Park, except for instead of giant dinosaurs and a theme park gone amok, it was animatronic robot cowboys.
Michael Crichton wrote that?
Yeah. Well, it's... he is involved in it to some degree. It was either based on one of his books or he wrote the screenplay. But
He did. It says he directed it too.
Westworld?
Yeah.
Oh, you looked it up. Yeah.
Yeah, it is him. He apparently directed it too. And I've seen that and I enjoy it. It's also campy throwback. Sci-fi.
I know. Your bread and butter.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, if it's not throwback, stupid throwback sci-fi, it's...
super violent, gruesome horror movies.
Right. Yeah. One or the other. That's all I ask. I don't have high expectations.
But yeah, so... You know, Spielberg, we've talked about before, he has kind of two modes. He has his populist blockbuster popcorn mode, and then he has... prestige film, Oscar attention mode. And I usually generally tend to like the blockbuster Spielberg more.
Oh, yeah.
I think there's a, in a weird way, I feel that's more authentic a lot of the time. Even though, well, I mean, I like a lot of his dramas as well, but.
I almost feel like there's more love in his, like, blockbusters. Like, there's something warmer about them. And then, like, it's like he knows what's good, and so he feels like he has to do it every once in a while. Whereas, like, the blockbusters, he's like, I really like dinosaurs.
Right. And he made Schindler's List and Jurassic Park right around the same time.
Yeah, it was like back-to-back, I was pretty sure.
Yeah, so that's a pretty sharp left, either which way came first. So hopefully with this movie, you know, he's made a lot of prestige movies recently. So hopefully with this movie, with the team that he made Jurassic Park with, and from the same author of the same source material, maybe we'll have something kind of more along those lines again. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me worry a little. My, weird fantasy about shrinking down all the humans to the size of like a quarter of an inch.
Yeah, is like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids just like a terrifying movie for you?
No. I love that movie. What I'm saying is I think that we should do that to the whole human race, and then our resources would go a lot further. I have a whole story. I don't know if it's a book or if it's a comic or what it is, but I have something planned.
Oh, now someone's gonna rip it off.
I know. Well, I mean, I'm already ripping people off, so it doesn't really matter.
Fair enough. My other story, Todd Solondz is doing a semi-sequel to his breakthrough hit, Welcome to the Dollhouse, which came out in like the mid-90s, called Wiener Dog, and it's going to star Greta Gerwig as the character that Heather Maserato played in Welcome to the Dollhouse, which those two look absolutely nothing alike. And it's also going to star Julie Delpy, Brie Larson, and like Saoirse Mamet.
And Danny DeVito.
Big cast.
Yes.
Big cast with a lot of, like, you know, somewhat prominent millennial female actresses. Yeah, I guess this isn't, like, completely unheard of. He did a semi-sequel to Happiness a few years called Life During Wartime, where he recasted all the characters from that movie with new actors that don't necessarily look the same. And he kind of, like, takes it from a new angle. I've read the synopsis here in the Variety article that I'm reading. And I guess, like, this is... What's the character's name? Wiener is her last name. Dawn Wiener. as she grows up,
I have no idea about any of this, so it's very funny in context. But keep going.
All right. Well, you've never seen Welcome to the Dollhouse?
No, never.
Oh, it's a Todd Solondz flick.
I can't even really place. I know the name, but I can't think of what he's
didn't
done.
Didn't I inflict Happiness on you?
I've seen that. Okay.
Yeah.
I actually, we talked about that recently too. Because super, I re-watched super dark it.
Comedy is sort of his realm. Like, I mean, like pitch black.
Yeah.
As dark as you can get before it. You don't know to be funny.
I don't know if I should laugh during it or not.
Right.
I mean, I do, but I don't know. I feel bad about myself.
I mean, of all the films I've seen of his, and I've only seen a smattering. I think Happiness is kind of his magnum opus. I think it's okay. Sort of brilliant. And actually, as I get older, I think it's better and better. But Welcome to the Dollhouse is pretty good, too. It's kind of like in plot and sort of the way it works. It's a little bit like a much darker, more satirical version of Napoleon Dynamite. Like, okay. About this really awkward middle school girl who's, like, kind of coming into her own sexually, but, like, doesn't know how to express it because she doesn't really have the capacity to understand it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's just, like, fumbling through her puberty in front of everybody.
Oh, okay.
And so in this movie, Greta Gerwig's going to be playing the main character, and it's going to be more of, like, a portmanteau film where there's, like, multiple storylines, I guess a little bit like Happiness in that way. And it's going to be about all the people she sort of has interacted with over the years.
If anybody wants to check out Happiness, it's alarming. Just putting that out there.
Well, I believe it's NC-17 or unrated, and it's never been, I don't think there's ever been like an R version of it or something, unless it was edited down for TV.
I don't know how you would, because you'd have to take out content and it would just be. You'd have to take out
entire plot threads. Yeah.
Yes.
And I mean, it's a film that would never get made now, probably.
Oh, no, probably not, no. Well, maybe. I think somebody could maybe do it on their own. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you would have to self-finance it. I don't know if you would get distribution at this point. Like, even like your A24s or Annapurna or, you know, those kind of things, I don't know if they would even take it on.
Well,
I mean, Todd Solondz has made films since then, but he's never made anything quite as dark as that.
It was in a time period where it could be made, you know what
I'm saying? Right, there was that whole, I mean, we talked about it last week with Citizen Ruth. There was kind of an era, like in the mid to late 90s, where people were really pushing boundaries and seeing how far they could take, you know, how close they could get to the line of indecency. And people really kind of were into it at a point in time. It was sort of like a, you know, mini revolution in film.
It was like the opposite of right now, almost.
Yeah, like the total opposite. So there you go. I guess I'm kind of excited about it. I'm down. We got the biggest story. We saved the best for last, just like Vanessa Williams. What is it?
I didn't get that reference either. Oh, that's like the... Okay.
Right.
I feel dumb.
There you go.
Okay, so that Spider-Man movie, they cast it finally, and it's not as a Butterfield. Like everybody said for like 10 weeks. No, it's totally him. It's, the kid's name is Tom Holland. Holland. I'm not really sure. But he's been in a few different things, but, the director is kind of a semi-unknown. That's why I'm looking for it. But it, you know, when you're like looking, but you have to go through the most random, I mean, this isn't very random because I'm literally... John Watts is the director.
Yeah, what has he done?
So far, he's done something that's been drawing some people's attention. It's got Kevin Bacon and it's called Cop Car.
Oh, yeah. I saw the video, trailer for that a little while ago because I posted it in a media roundup. And of all of the trailers that I was posting in that same article, that was the one where I was like, I would see this. This looks fucking weird.
So apparently he directed a movie called Clown. It's an Eli Roth thing as well. Yeah,
I remember the trailer for that. Mm.
So he's sort of an unknown. So they kind of got two not well-known, but maybe have like a little bit of a budding something happening there. Mm. A little bit of an energy, which I don't think is wrong when casting this kind of stuff. But basically what they're kind of talking about is they want to make it like a John Waters. Yeah. Am I saying the right one?
No.
I'm saying the pervert not. This time.
John Hughes.
John Hughes. There we go. So they wanted to make kind of a John Hughes and definitely an ensemble and kind of really showcase the other characters. I'm guessing they kind of want to do the like ultimate kind of Spider-Man kind of high school scene specifically.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that because they are going younger. They are. I think it could be a better version of any of the movies that's come out. I have some hope for it anyways, but, so that's what they're kind of looking at right now. I'm not really sure too much more than that, but it is cast. is a fairly...
Yeah, it's officially cast. I mean, there was a short list forever, and Asia Butterfield was sort of everyone's, I guess, like, they believed he would be the one. Like, he would seem the most likely. Mm-hmm. Like, Nat Wolff was attached to it at one point, and just a ton of people. Like, it was insane at one point how many people were on the short list. And then it was the one I knew the least about who eventually got it. I'm a little kind of skeptical of all of this, just because, I mean, I know this is like Kevin Feige and Marvel, you know, and the character will first appear, I think, in Civil War.
Yeah, it might be a blip, but I'm not really privy, or do I know how much, right, like, if that's really going to matter that
they want to, like, integrate him in kind of slowly, but before they give him his own movie, which might be a good idea, but I don't know. Like, I just feel like this character is just, it's just like a fire hydrant in the middle of a park and every dog comes along and pisses on it.
Very colorful.
both in the comics and in film. Like, for some reason, it should be a character that is so easy to get. Mm-hmm. Like, all you need is insecure kid in Queens trying to, like, solve crimes. Like, that's all you need.
Right.
Put some cool villains, make us give a shit about the characters a little.
Well, I mean, there are other elements, because there's biology and the
right, I mean, there's a science weird aspect company to it, stuff, and, you know, and... but I'm talking about the nuts and bolts of why it works as a story. And right, for some reason, we get it right maybe 1.5 times, and then eventually people just keep piling stuff on top of stuff on top of stuff. And maybe it's because the character just doesn't work on a large scale.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's that, or maybe it's... Maybe. I didn't really think about it that way. But, I mean, I think what's kind of interesting is another thing that Kevin Feige was kind of talking about, is he was like, I think that this can be more... This can definitely be more like... He specifically cited Inside Out because it's popular right now, but he's like, it doesn't have to be, you know, world-shattering events. It can just be, you know, a little girl, like, how does she make it? Like, he talked right about that being... something about the character, which I think is true about Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. That's essential to the character, is that it's about him as a person. It's not necessarily about him saving the day.
Right, exactly. And I think if,
in fact, sometimes it's about him not saving the day.
Most of the time. I think if, you know, if I have any faith in it, it's that it is the Marvel brand kind of taking it over, especially taking it away from Sony, who is, you know, screwed the pooch twice on this.
Mm-hmm.
But I still, it's like, okay, so he's going back to high school. He's going to get bit by the spider. It's like the whole thing again. Like, I mean, maybe they won't do an origin story, because just, why would they?
Right.
But at the same time, it's just like, I feel like this character is never going to advance past a certain point.
Oh, you mean past high school? Well, I think that's his essential, you know, it is essentially... His story is a coming of age and kind of, you know, fumbling. Right. And it's kind of a surrogate for fumbling through life. I think you can do an older version of the character, but for some reason, everybody wants to bring him back to high school. And I don't think that that's wrong for the film necessarily, but it could go either way. The one thing that I guess worries me is the other thing that they've talked about on this is that they're going to do another villain. Like, they're going to do a villain we haven't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be okay or weird.
We're running out of villains.
Well, the article that I read mentioned the Vulture or Kraven the Hunter.
Yeah.
Which, the Vulture, sure. Kraven the Hunter, I think you have to have some lead up to that character. And beyond that, he, like, the biggest plot line is about him, like, you know, killing himself. So...
I mean, Kraven's had a lot of big storylines. I think you could tell one that doesn't go there. Can I state my dream casting for Kraven?
Sure.
Just popped in my head while you mentioned it.
Yeah.
Joe Manganiello.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Just throwing that out there. Maybe he's not Brazilian enough.
No, I think he's perfect. I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one's for free, Marvel. Okay. Well, let's go ahead and get on with the reviews.
Oh, yeah, we kind of mumbled through these. I don't know why. We usually don't have this much of a problem with news.
It's all right. I'm going to edit a lot of that. Don't even...
Good fucking luck.
Okay, so last week, I had already seen the movie Dope.
Mm-hmm.
But this week, yeah, absolutely nothing of substance came out. But yeah, so why don't you go ahead and describe a little bit about what happens in Dope? You've seen it more recently than I have.
I have. Basically, it's about these group of teens that kind of don't fit into their world. Basically, they live in like the Compton area of L.A. Mm-hmm. And it's about these three characters, best friends, Malcolm, Diggy, and the other guy. I don't remember his name.
The Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah. I don't know his character's name, but he was fun in it as well. Mm-hmm. But it's about these three best friends that kind of like just trying to make it through a kind of hostile and strange environment. Strange isn't really the word. That's a bad wording for that. It's not strange. It's just not your typical in film.
Right.
What I love about this film too, is that I'm just going to kind of say it and not even try to like, just go straight to the nose.
Okay.
This is kind of a film about this kind of, I guess, neighborhood that I've always wanted to see. Because it's really a...
or...
No. In a film. Because, I mean, you always get these, you know, street hardcore thug types.
Right.
And that's not the only type that live in these neighborhoods.
Yeah, real people live there, too.
Yeah, and so this is about those real people that have to live there, and I like it because it shows a different side.
Yeah.
And I love that their little idiosyncrasies, what they're into and what they what they think is cool, and
like they're super into like 90s hip hop, and they're part of that whole like millennial 90s revisionism obsession.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people our age when we were in high school were like really all about the 80s. Like there was this kind of like Rubik's Cubes and NES and all of that kind of stuff. And now for this generation, they're really into like Sega Genesis and Yo MTV Raps.
That could be true, yeah. And apparently it's the heyday of hip hop. I don't know about all their like little the in stuff, the niche stuff they're into, but I love the characters and I love the world that was set up. And I think it's trying to sell it or kind of pitch it to somebody, it is kind of like if Scott Pilgrim was in a rough neighborhood. Because, I mean, that's essentially like there's some interesting moments that are super violent, but aren't played that way at all.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like a matter of factly. This is kind of what happens there, but it's just part of life. It's not like. They don't do it like it's so harrowing. And I kind of loved how they presented it. It was kind of, I don't know. This is really this is the type of film about that kind of, like this kind of a neighborhood, and this kind of community that I've wanted to see. Now, I do think it kind of throws back to some films like Friday.
Yeah.
And films like that.
I thought about a certain type of black filmmaking of the early 90s. You feel a little bit of stuff like F. Gary Gray's Friday, and then a little bit of stuff like even the first like House Party came to mind. And you know, those movies sort of after the sequels and stuff, they kind of became a self parody of themselves. But like the first one is actually kind of a legitimate film that played at Sundance. I mean, it dates clearly, but it's also a real movie.
House Party.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And so you kind of get the vibe of those movies, and even like inflections of early Spike Lee.
Yeah, but I think those inflections are I like those inflections, but I also like this movie has a lot of personality.
Oh yes, certainly does.
And I think talking earlier about the Spider-Man movie and talking about like a John Hughes, not John Waters. I think it does show a similar type of like high school setting like that in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not just kind of like, oh, this is kind of the pitch. Like it's actually about young people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, it was funny and kind of cute, like is the best way to say it, I guess. like, but kind of like real. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I know what you're saying. I enjoyed the movie immensely, and I'm not going to say that it's a perfect film. I think that
no,
you know, the basic plot of the movie, besides just the coming of age element of it, is there's this sort of somewhat contrived drug deal gone wrong plot. Like, basically, they're these really geeky kids who accidentally kind of get tangled up in this drug deal when they start hanging out with the wrong people to seem cooler than they are.
Mm-hmm.
And towards the middle of the movie, that stuff really kind of takes front and center of what the movie is. And there was a part of me was like, I was enjoying so much just living with these kids doing their day-to-day thing. That mm-hmm. A part of me sort of was a little sad that it decided to go such a broad genre direction. But
I was sort of okay because it kind of mixed in with the name, and it also kind of and it to me it made sense about redefining what that means,
right?
Because even that storyline, like, they redefine how a drug selling story has to go. And I mean, you can even kind of talk Cheech and Chong ish kind of stuff, kind of.
Right. I mean, I thought a lot about Pineapple Express. Kind of had a similar kind of plot structure, mm-hmm. and it kind of gets madcap in a way that movie does as well. Although I think this movie does it quite a bit better, largely in part because of that cultural specificity of taking place in, you know, downtown Inglewood, California.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people, I haven't read reviews of this. I accidentally, when I was taking a lunch at work, I had NPR on and Elvis Mitchell's show was mm-hmm. on, and he was interviewing the director. So mm-hmm. I listened to like 5 minutes of that.
True.
But I've, you know, I generally try and kind of avoid reviews, but I would be very surprised if nobody mentions Dear White People when talking about this movie, because I think both kind of have a similar goal, although they do it in very, very different ways.
Mm-hmm.
But they both kind of harken back to an era of African American filmmaking, independent filmmaking, especially, that was, you know, very, somewhat politically minded and all about sort of identity and finding a place in white culture to have a voice. And this film and that film, Dear White People, kind of further that argument in saying, you know, in a post-racial society, in a post-Obama as our president society, now it's less about having a voice and it's more about defining your voice. And here, you know, both movies are about sort of not fitting into your own culture.
Right.
And having this weird kind of tug and pull between what you're supposed to be and what you're perceived as. And I think all of that stuff is all the way through the movie is really, really interesting, especially in the context of this drug deal gone wrong plot. Because, you know, it's sort of these people who, it doesn't matter that they're complete geeks in their culture. To white culture, they're just as, you know, if they were to ride their bikes up to Beverly Hills, mm-hmm. then they would be perceived just the exact same way as the Bloods and Crips they have to avoid every day not to get their shoes stolen.
Right, right. Kind of interesting because, like, another thing I liked about the film is mm-hmm. that they cast the thug gangstery types
yeah.
as, like, jocks, essentially.
Yeah, they're the jocks of their school. They're just, you know, we always think of it in terms of, you know, we, like, basically white people.
I don't think
of these people as, like, these hardcore, you know, like we see in the rap videos who are just strapped to the nines and they're just gonna be ready to kill you. And, you know, they might some, but these are also teenagers who go to high schools and they have teenage problems just like everybody else. So, I like the way that they play, like, when they ride their bikes down the alley and they're like, ugh, there's a blood, you know, a group of bloods we have to avoid. Oh, well, like, it's just kind of every day for them.
Right. Well, and I like how they play with the labels
yeah.
because I mean, cause we are also talking about like how society like puts labels on things. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just how humans think, you know. We think in heuristics, and we think in these short clips, basically, to kind of make things easy to think about, easy to kind of take in. Whereas most situations aren't like that. And that's what I really love about the film. Mm-hmm. That's maybe a little heady, but I mean, to kind of come down a little, it's just funny, and it's got a really quirky personality, and it just zips by.
Yeah, it's like, just, it's a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
And it's one of the best teen movies, you know, not just like in this world of, you know, black filmmaking or whatever. It's just one of the best teen movies, like, period, that I've seen, at least since Superbad. I thought about that movie a little bit while I was watching that as well. Actually, in my head, I was saying, oh, this is like Superbad meets Friday. but like maybe with like a hint of Boys in the Hood. But yeah, no, I really dug this movie quite a bit.
I thought it was a lot of fun, and I think it does everything you're saying. I think it's smart, but you can watch it just as a dumb comedy. Like, it doesn't have to be, there's no, like, it doesn't get so caught up in these issues. It's just part of the world.
I mean, up until the very, very end, it never actually says any of this stuff out loud. It's just interesting to think about in the context of, because I think, you know, we talked about it a lot when we reviewed Dear White People as well, that, you know, unfortunately, with a lot of these kind of niche film markets, whether it be black filmmaking or LGBT filmmaking or whatever, that instead of just getting to play in the overall field of filmmaking in general or independent filmmaking in general, they got shoved further and further in their niche to the point where, you know, you never know any of the actors. They're only marketed to their own demographic. And here's a movie that is kind of playing for keeps.
Well, and I think that it does ask those questions, mm-hmm. but I don't think you have to watch it at that level. Like, I think what I'm saying is it doesn't separate the two.
Yeah.
Which is, this is part of the world. This is what they're living with. This is, and I'm not even saying I'm saying within the world of the film. I don't know if this represents a real life or real neighborhood. I'm just saying within the language of the film, it works.
Right.
There's also this like side character who's this, you know, white
stoner
dude.
Yeah, kind of and black guy wannabe kind of thing. And they have a lot of fun with that character as well.
Yeah, and I mean, they ask some, I think, some interesting questions that I don't think the film answers, and I don't think that film answers on purpose, you know? and I like how they kind of leave it open-ended and play it off as a joke at the same time. It's not that they're just, like, trying to make this super heady movie. They're making a fun movie, but answering questions, but it, posing questions in it. It is a good movie. Mm-hmm. It does have, I wouldn't say the only thing that I guess my little tick mark is, I really didn't like the bad guy. I thought he was played
a little too broadly.
A little too broadly. He seemed like he was just a little too mustache twirling with all these other like really interesting characters.
But I mean, that's kind of what I'm talking about.
He's played, not how he's portrayed. Because in the film, also, they even like say, "Oh, he's a Harvard graduate. He just not everybody ends up, you know, doing, you know." On Wall Street, not everybody ends up in this. Some people end up back in the neighborhood like this. And I thought that was an interesting, and then they introduced the character and how it was played. I was like, please stop what you're doing with your voice. Just don't do that.
No. Yeah. I kind of agree. I think there's a lot of contrivances in the movie. I mean, a lot of like things where you're like, well, that's convenient that happened to work out exactly that way. But it's also just one of those kind of movies, and it's playing in a certain sort of tradition. Mm-hmm. So I forgive a lot of that. But yeah, I would say my only, it's not even like a tick or a beef or whatever, but I definitely took note of it. These three are also like in a punk rock band, and they are like way too good. Like every time they play, I'm like, you would be super famous. You would be like the biggest thing in the world right now if you could play that well.
And to get really nitpicky, it's like, well, is it this? Is it like dance punk? Is it blah, blah, blah? Like, I mean, you could get really...
Like, that's irrelevant. I'm just saying, like, the type of, like, the way they're playing and, like, whenever they play, and maybe it's like a that's the way they sound in their head type of thing.
Right.
But it, like...
Oh, because they're definitely lip syncing, and it's like a... It's like they do kind of... They do show it like a... It would have been fun, I guess, to have a cutaway of the janitor coming in. How they actually
sound, and they're, like, really shambly. I kept expecting that to happen, but...
Well, you go into the POV of the janitor that's always coming in, and he comes in and hears them playing, and is like... and you hear what it actually sounds like, as opposed to what they want it to sound like.
Yeah.
I mean, the song was fun and catchy, and I liked a lot about it.
It sounded a little bit like Walk Like an Egyptian if it were played by Sex Bob-omb.
Yes. A little, yeah. Maybe that's why I thought of Scott Pilgrim. But
yeah, I think everyone should go out and see this. It's a great comedy. I don't think you have to be of this neighborhood or this ethnicity, whatever, to enjoy it. I think it'll play for a lot of different ages, and there's a lot to get out of it.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of broad humor, and it's just a good film. It's funny.
Yeah.
I mean, all the things we talked about are part of the film, but I think it actually covers just the broad of what do you do when you're different.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that it necessarily has to play just to a specific audience. I think it plays to the wide audience. And I think this is a great film.
I do too.
So sweet.
All right. Well, let's get on to our Netflix homework, which you assigned me last week.
I did.
It is, The Boys from Brazil.
Yeah, why don't you want... Are you going to set that up for us?
I'm going to set it up, but let me look it up real fast. I don't have it up.
Are you worried?
No, I just wanted to get my deets straight before I started. This came out in 1978, directed by Franklin Schaefer. Stars Gregory Peck and Laurence Olivier and James Mason. Somewhat older Laurence Olivier, Gregory Peck, and James Mason. And kind of interestingly, Laurence Olivier and Gregory Peck are kind of playing the opposite roles that they would have normally played throughout their career.
It's true.
Whereas now, Gregory Peck plays this old ex-Nazi who's trying to start up the regime again through several bizarre and nefarious plans, but basically includes this big assassination.
It's not just a Nazi. He's Joseph Mengele. I'm not trying to like be like picky, but that, I mean, he was like one of the, you know, one of the biggest bad guys.
Yeah.
Of, if we can say that, of World War II. And it was sort of, you messaged me about this the other day and you're like, wow, it's a doozy. You're very right. I think that people need to know that going into our discussion.
Laurence Olivier plays this old Jewish German named Ezra Lieberman, who's a little bit sort of like a private eye detective in a lot of ways. He's kind of played in a very sort of Sherlock Holmes-ish sort of fashion, where he's gotten word of this plot, this big assassination plot, and he's going to try and get ahead of it as covertly as possible and try and find Mengele before he reaches these different locations to take out these people. And on the way, he finds out more and more about how deep and how weird this plot really gets. Like I said, this came out in 1978, but there's a very strange tone here. Actually, a movie that I thought about a lot while I was watching it, especially towards the end, was The Kingsman.
Yes, yes.
Because they both have this weird sense of, oh, this feels very kind of classic and kind of not of its time in a weird way. Like, it came out in 78, but it feels a little bit more like 58.
Mm-hmm.
Partly because of who's in it, but also because of the tone is played very light in a lot of ways. But then it gets into these scenes where you're like, oh yeah, this is 78, where it gets really into the violence. And really plays a lot of this in an extreme fashion, you know, kind of on a turn of a dime. And the whole thing is very, very pulpy.
This and okay.
Arguably silly and this, ludicrous.
Okay, but this film
so
is
so entertaining.
Yeah, this film is problematic. Sorry, I thought you were there was a lot of adjectives there at the end. But no, you're completely right. This film is problematic, but I absolutely loved it. I'm not going to like agree. Even it's deeply problematic. First of all, nothing like Paraguay, nothing like its people. Not even in Paraguay. I had to look up where it was filmed because I was like, oh, this isn't right. This doesn't feel right. This doesn't anything. Mm. And it was filmed in Portugal.
Right.
And there are some things. It's kind of the weird. It's one of the weirdest films I've watched, really, for a lot of different reasons. It's not trying to be weird. And
which
I think
makes
at the
it weirder.
Yes, because the. And I think at the time, I think at the time, it wouldn't have been seen as weird.
Mm-hmm.
But I there's no way to not look at it now and be like, "What the fuck is this movie?" Especially with the history we have and how we can kind of look back at those situations and things like that. And this movie is made really well. The acting is superb.
Well, you have. You know, some of the world's greatest actors in the leads. Yeah.
Right. Well, but I mean, even like the small parts played by I kind of dug the kids and I kind of dug, you know, like the young Jewish. I forgot what their little league is called, but.
Right. Basically, they were like Hitler's youth grown up.
Yeah. But this is like
neo-Nazis.
This is like a James Bond movie almost, too, without any James Bond character in it. Which kind of makes it better, in my estimation.
I agree. I like Ezra Lieberman more than James Bond. I would I could see this being like a series of films, like with this character, kind of like a Sherlock Holmes going out and solving these weird pulpy mysteries.
Well, I mean, everything about it is, I mean, in the conceit, I mean, I'm glad that they kind of play it close to the chest what it's about until about midway through. And then you're like, oh, this is what it was, where it's going. Okay. and the other thing is they set you up and then they take away certain things and they do it in an unexpected fashion because there's almost no films where the old dude is your lead character.
No. Yeah.
And that's another thing that I think I actually really loved about the film. I absolutely adored this. It is deeply problematic. There are a lot of issues that could arise, but looking back on it, like it's like with a very like fondness, because this is like exploitation film done by the best directors, best writers, and best actors.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
I think like I was talking about, there's kind of an awkwardness between, there's a sort of classic vibe to it. It's almost kind of like North by Northwest-ish, you know, kind of.
Well, some of these actors, like, they won Academy Awards for roles. So that's why I'm just like.
Kind of blows my mind because it is so, so pulpy.
But I think justifiably so. But I think that this is like one of those. This is like an example you could give to people to be like, well, look at this example.
Mm-hmm.
Anything can be good if you take it serious enough.
Yeah.
And
but
like
not so serious that it becomes like dour either.
Yeah.
I mean, it has this kind of movie universe that it's living in. It's not taking it's not like Hester Street.
Right.
It's a much more kind of bouncy action film. And it is kind of playing it as a genre film.
Well, that's the other thing I was really thinking was this is also the other thing that was kind of great about it is it was pre-80s action era.
Yeah, kind of before badass cinema. Yeah.
Yeah. So you actually kind of got to see a different kind of action film, which was also like really great to see.
Yeah.
Because you don't get that even now, really, because it's almost forgotten. If you're going to make an action film, you're going to be a badass action film, as you kind of said.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, no, I agree. This is a strange one. And it's one of those ones that I feel like, you know, I had not heard a lot about it prior to doing this. I may have like come up peripherally at stuff I was looking at or reading about, but it's not one of those ones that I think a lot of people are recommended. And I feel like it's sort of one of those maybe hidden gems type movies that you can show to people and be like, oh man, have you not seen this? We need to watch this. I think it would make actually a really good double feature with The Kingsman.
Well, it does have a really weird sci-fi element to it.
Sure.
As well. Yeah.
Once and you I mean, realize
we were talking about the pulp, we were talking about the pulp element, but it really this it was beautiful. Everyone should probably not everyone, but I highly recommend this film for people who, you know, I think if you like older James Bond films, it's kind of fun. I think if you like, I think it's interesting to see it as somebody who does like action movies and, you know, big dumb blockbuster popcorn movies and stuff like that. I think that this is fun because it gives you just a different, completely, you know, flavor.
Yeah.
Or exploitation movies or any of the things we've mentioned, really.
Uh-huh.
I the whole time I was watching it, like, it was just in dumb bemusement because I was like, I don't think I've seen a much more beautiful disaster than this. Like,
I mean, what's funny about it is that it's easy to kind of look at it and scoff. I think, yeah, if you were to show this, especially to younger people, I think who are 19 or younger, they probably would only be able to laugh at it.
Right.
But I think if, as soon as you kind of succumb to the movie and you kind of realize what it is and what it's going for, I think the actual plot mechanics of it and the actual storytelling is done very, very well. There's nothing about it that seems haphazard to me.
No,
it's just, it's the premises are so ridiculous that it, but I think the movie also sort of knows that.
I think it does too, because again, it uses that James Bond inflection to be like, no, this is okay.
Yeah.
That's why I keep coming back to that is like, cause a James Bond villain isn't really a real person.
No, none of them are.
Like, it's kind of this weird take on a villain.
Mm-hmm.
This film, like, yeah, don't get confused on what I'm saying. When I say beautiful disaster, I mean, when I say beautiful, I mean it is well made, well acted, well written, well plotted, well paced, well edited. It's
masterwork. Takes you on a wild ride. Yeah.
Yeah. It's masterwork filmmaking. Frank J. Schnafter, this is the guy that did Planet of the Apes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the original. So, I don't know. I can't. I feel like somebody should have recommended this movie to me already.
Yeah, me too. And I also kind of see it as a little bit of a precursor to, like, the Indiana Jones thing.
Mm-hmm.
When when Nazi as iconography, I mean, I guess there was, like, Hogan's Heroes and stuff, but Nazi iconography could be taken, I don't want to say lightly, but it maybe more mythic,
mm-hmm.
or legendary, as opposed to, you know, not so in our recent history that it's in the too soon camp.
If not being, like you were talking about, being dour and being...
Right, yeah. And there's actually inflections here that I felt would kind of pop up later in, like, the Indiana Jones stuff.
Yeah.
And this is of its ilk.
This is a strange film. It's a strange, strange film.
It's a transitional film.
I don't think I've seen, you can think of things sort of like it, but I can't think of anything exactly like this. I couldn't think of a different time period it could be in.
It's great.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it quite a bit. And next week for our Netflix homework, we are going to watch, hold on, I had on my thing, Beyond the Black Rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
Another sci-fi film, but this one I know very little about it. I know from the stills and posters and stuff I've seen, it's very stylish. So I'm interested to see what's going on there.
Yeah, sounds good. I thought you were trying to make me listen to Dio when you first said it, but
Before I get on to the end notes. We did get another message from Patrick from Make Dad Read Comics, our friend Patrick. I sent him a little message on one of his last episodes that he did on the death of Superman. He did an episode with his dad about death of Superman, which that's a difficult comic to to read out of the context of when it came out. If mm-hmm. you're a regular comic reader, I can't imagine being a 60-year-old ex-cop who doesn't normally read comics reading it. But yeah, so he wanted to say awesome and thanks. So thanks for what I said about the episode. And he said, first man, I enjoyed your last few shows, including the Marvel Epic cast, although I had some nitpicks, but overall awesome. I have not listened to the Jurassic World cast because I'm seeing that this week. So maybe by this point he's already seen it. Says, you two have made Dad a better Netflix viewer without him even knowing because I pass along your Netflix suggestions to him. So that's one of the reasons we do that segment, I think, is not just to dare each other to see these weird things.
That's partially, but it's also, I don't know. It's not my favorite segment, I think we do.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. It's a good way to show people what else is in there. And, you know, I think, unfortunately, when you're looking at the different, you know, segments of Netflix, they always put the most prominent or the newest or whatever in the first maybe four rows. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you know, there's a lot of junk in there. But then every once in a while, you'll get a really good one. Hopefully, we're helping people kind of find those or sift through the garbage anyway.
Yeah, we're doing a public service.
We're doing a good thing.
We're shifting through Netflix for you, the people.
And it says, congrats on finishing grad school and on gainful employment. I just completed my second master's of education this month. Congratulations. I'm sure literary research and instructional data analysis are not as exciting as yours, but I like writing nerdy algorithms about linguistic data and poring through vocabulary acquisitions meta-studies in ELS adult populations. I don't even know what that sentence means. So, I'll assume it's amazing. It sounds very technical. But yes, thank you, Patrick, for emailing us. And if anybody wants to send us a message about anything we've talked about in this episode or past episodes, you can contact us at jabberinthedrone@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/jabberpodcast, where you can see other news stories we post but don't talk about on the show, as well as suggest Netflix homework or anything you want to comment on. You can do so there. You can find us on Twitter at jabberpodcast, all one word. I kind of ignore our Twitter. It's there, but you have to toggle back and forth from my regular one. I'm trying to get more, you know, involved with it, but we'll see what happens. We're also on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. If you're there, please leave us a review and a five-sentence. Let me try that again. We're also on iTunes and Stitcher Radio, and if you're there, please leave us a five-star review. Is that what I say?
I don't know. Is that what you say?
I don't know. It's getting really hot in my room.
Yeah, I'm kind of at that point, too. Like, I almost, like, take, like, sleep naps between everything you say, and then I just wake up and go, oh, bologna sandwich, and then go back to sleep.
We're also searchable under the Zune and Windows Podcast Network, as well as Pocket Cast. You can read my movie reviews that I do every week at the Idaho State Journal at saladforkreviews.blogspot.com. You can see the reviews that I've written for the MacGuffin at mcguff.in/author/Cassidy. You can read some of the stuff that Rich has done over his blog, rdwally.weebly.com. And be sure to listen to Brad, Amanda, and Alyssa over their podcast, Quarter Life Crisis, at quartercrisis.podbean.com. They just posted a few new episodes, like almost rapidly in a row, like last week. They did a couple interviews with some cool people. And be sure to listen to Leland over in Olympia, Washington at dampercast.com, as well as Patrick at Make Dad Read Comics. So we will talk to you next week.
Okay, have a good one.